Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance FIL 240 for spring semester 2026.
Today, bond prices and yields. And you also have a quiz today, and I will cut out just a little after one to get you your attendance and get you squared away for the quiz. And then Monday of next week is review for the midterm exam. Again, that is when I will go through. I will tell you what I think you should know. And as you write down, you are writing your study guide because I am guiding you on what I am looking at. I'll be looking at the midterm as I tell you what I expect you to know. And then I'll also do some questions from the quizzes just to make sure you're fully up to speed on that. And then on Wednesday, you come in, you take the midterm exam. Now, I am going to back up the chapters 6 and 7 until after spring break so that you have a little bit of breathing room, especially in this bond chapter, chapter 7. Now, the terminology, that's fair game here on this quiz, maybe a little bit, and on the midterm. But the math of it, which is what I'm going to do today, I'm not going to hold you responsible for that on the midterm exam at all. So don't sweat that out at all. And you'll have time, plenty of time to do the Chapter 7 homework. Because, like I said, that'll be due after the break. One more reminder, on March the 30th, you do have your Excel, assignment due, the certification. So make sure that you have that done. Take the time. It's 8 hours. You probably won't even need 8 hours to do it if you use the LinkedIn Learning link. So get it done as soon as you can. And with all of that behind us for a little bit here, we're going to look at the numbers today. And once I've done that, I'm going to pull up the bond valuation spreadsheet and show you how the math is done. But that's after we have a look at the numbers. And the numbers are around the world. It's been a fairly bullish day. It's nothing spectacular as far as the bulls are concerned. But as you can see here, the Nikkei was actually up dramatically today. All kinds of good news coming out of Japan. It just kept coming. I shouldn't say that. It was early afternoon over in that part of the world, and there'd been good news all morning, and then it just kind of fizzled out, no more good news, and so the market kind of topped out and drifted from there for the rest of the day. But it still ended up almost 2.25%, so that's a strong up day in Asia. And of course, you've got the other places over there. Hang Seng was up 0.2%. And you had, how was Australia today? Australia was actually up pretty good too. So it was bullish on the Asian eastern side of the world. And then we come over to Europe, and they were actually in a fairly strong positive mood today too. As you can see, looking at some of them like the CAC 40 and the DAX, they were both up. It wasn't spectacular, though, but it's still a decent day. And overall, you notice all that green. That tells us that across the world, it was a fairly bullish day and that we had been kind of in need of that because markets are still awfully skittish. And over here at the Dow, it was up 2/3. We're not finished yet. I keep forgetting this is an early class. So we're about a little more than halfway through the day. And the Dow is up pretty nicely. And so is the Standard & Poor's, up about a little more. And the NASDAQ is just pulling up really nicely. And that's normal. Dow is up. Then the S&P 500 is up a little more. And the NASDAQ is up even more. Just because you're getting into more risky securities, and so returns get magnified down or up in a normal day. But if I take this over here, and also notice that the VIX, remember the VIX is the metric of volatility in the market. And you can actually trade in the VIX. I can even show you. It's a kind of a dodgy play because you're betting on volatility increasing to make money on it. And in today, volatility was decreasing. The markets are calming down. They're relaxing up a bit. And the stress, there will be stress. Like I said, we're still in the earnings season, earnings reporting season. So we're still going to have those days that are really jittery. And also there's some other news that's coming out next week that should shake up the markets quite a bit. I can't tell you how much, but some of what's coming out next week, if it comes out unexpectedly bad, it could really rattle the markets. But let me take you down here to the commodities for just a minute or two. As you can see, gold is strong. It is just coming up. And so even though the market is bullish, there are definitely a lot of investors who are very much not believing that this will last. And the gold is pushing up to those nice territories. By the end of the semester, I should say, we'll probably see $6,000 an ounce on gold. There might be a few drops along the way, but there is this building sentiment that something very bad is coming, that a very darkened economy is on the horizon. And hence those gold investors, you can't scare them off too long before they'll come right back in, as they are doing now, to buy gold as a defensive investment. And here we go. As far as the crude, we're still above the 70, the 65-70 line, and it seems to want to stay there now. It's made it over 65 on the general crude, 70 on the light sweet Brent. And it wants to stay above that line now. I've noticed the gasoline prices have already nudged up a little bit because of this. And so, it's just how it is. And it'll probably get a little bit more aggressive going up over the next week or so. That comes down to a political issue that's going on with a deadline threat to the nation of Iran, which if it is attacked within the next 6 to 8 days, that's going to cause oil prices to really skyrocket. And Iran just ordered a new batch of anti-ship missiles from China, which means that they will be able to effectively bring down a lot of oil ships in the Persian Gulf trying to get through the Strait of Hormuz and out into the Indian Ocean and all that. Having a look at the technology sector here, it's bull day. Technology sector, the biggest sector in the sector map, it's green, and there are a lot of other greens. A little bit of red in there. The industrials are down, and that's not surprising because our industrial base used to be the biggest sector, and now it's not, but it's still a very important sector. And the industrials are facing a great deal of difficulty because they are manufacturers. And a lot of them need raw materials. And those raw materials don't exist in the United States, or they exist in only small amounts. So we rely on imports for a lot of things that industrial sector needs. And they're just, now there's this big tariff on them. So that causes us some consternation. The real estate sector is down, and it's not down too much, but what I hear about that is that we are definitely coming into a housing shortage. And new construction has been, especially of residential homes, has really taken a hit because we've lost a lot of the basic labor that builds those homes, and that is a result of the aggressive anti-immigration policy. So that sector is going to be having some problems, and that will of course lead to more housing shortages and all of that, especially for affordable housing. Coming down here, let me show you something. I did want to show you one. Remember I told you about the VIX, that volatility? Like I said, you can trade on it, VIXX. I hope that's right. Is that VXX? Oh, there it is. Yeah, get a little excited. Okay. Now this is a bet on vol. And you notice how the volatility was falling in that red chart? This is tracking that volatility. This is an investment. You can buy this. You can order this. I want one round lot VIX at 27.85 or better, something like that. You can buy this. And today, volatility is down. So this tracking thing, this ETN as it's called, it's like sort of like an ETF, an ETN, it's going to follow that down. So, for example, on the other side, if you were looking at stocks, and I've shown you these before, if you wanted to just bet on markets going up or markets going down, there are some things called QQQs and others that can do that. Like TQQQ is essentially an investment in a bull market. You buy this if the bulls are running. And it's like a stock, and QQQ. And notice that it's up today because the market is up. So you're not betting on individual stocks in these kinds of investments, but you're betting on whether the bulls are running or the bears are running. So if you're a bull, you buy TQQ, and today you've got a hell of a winning day on TQQQ. And then the opposite of that, oh, by the way, these QQQs, they magnify the bull or the bear. So you might have a decent, what the heck, did I just have a stroke? Okay. Last time I'll talk about bears and bulls. No, but where the heck was it? Oh, these are magnifiers. A lot of these, if the market is up a little bit, these will magnify that. And you'll make more than the market. If the market is down, then they will magnify the down. So in this one, I would show you as one, SQQQ. If you're a bear, and notice that it's a bull day, so a bear play like SQQQ is going to get your butt kicked on it. So if you decide, I'm a bull, but I don't know exactly what stocks to be bullish about, then you would probably be better off to reach into TQQQ or something like that. And if you say, I'm a bear, but I don't know what I should be bearish about, not exactly, what stocks, then you would want to more generalize your investment play for SQQQ. And these are... you just order these. They're just like a stock to buy. You just have to appreciate that they're pretty darn risky. Let me go back here to TQQQ. I don't know if they're reporting a beta on it or not right now. Yeah, there's there's your beta. Do you see that beta, 3.50? That is a terribly high beta. And that's because it's a magnifier. It magnifies gains and magnifies losses. And so, yeah, you're going to be playing in the world of betas that are in the stratosphere. They're nosebleed territory betas. But if you want to do that kind of a roll of the dice, you can go to Vegas and go to a casino and play. Or you can do this, the difference being that in the casino, at least you can order a good meal. Here, all you do is sit at your computer and wonder why the hell you did something as stupid as take on a QQQ. Or think you're brilliant if it goes the way you want it to. But anyway, I just wanted to show you a few of those today. And notice that you don't get projections of these. You don't see dividends on these. Now, these kinds of ETFs, ETNs, The one thing that is, I've mentioned this before, is always keep an eye on the expense ratio. That's how much of the action that the investment managers, the managers of the fund, are keeping for themselves. I really like to see it no more than about 0.3. This is about 0.89. But at the same time, you have to appreciate that the cats who do this are playing in the world of some pretty exotic stuff to make those kinds of magnifiers. They work in the world of futures contracts, which I've barely mentioned in here, and things like exotica, well, not exotica, but very risky stuff. So I am more tolerant of a high expense ratio like that simply because this takes real high-powered expertise to keep these things under control. So it's just one of those things you just have to think about sometimes. And I had mentioned a few other, I had been mentioning some stocks. One that I did not look at this before now, but I will show it to you, NVIDIA. I had heard that there were investors coming back into it for some reason. Oh, yeah. And yeah, look at that. It's up for the day. I had heard that investors were kind of making one last run to buy into it, to drive it, because they think it's going to go up before it goes back down. And so there is a backward rotation back into this high beta environment. However, if you look on another one, MSFT, the question is, how are they being taken? They are being taken back into this backward rotation. And you see this is going to be happening right now. Analysts that I know say it's temporary because they are going to drop in the long run. But there seems to be this taste for giving it one last play before it gets to be ugly out there. The same, I think, I'm not sure about this one, but I heard mentioned Google. Oh, well, Alphabet. No, it didn't. It's really not participating in this backward rotation. So, in other words, it's not a sure thing to jump into high tech right now. But some of them are really roaring. You saw Microsoft, you saw NVIDIA, they were really up today. But you can't just say, well, I'm going to just buy technology stocks, because this backward rotation is leaving some of the companies in the dust. And one more right here, just as another check on the high-tech companies. Yeah, Apple is doing pretty good today, up about 1%. Not as much as NVIDIA, not as much as Microsoft, but it's up somewhat for the day. So there you are, some of the good stuff that is out there in the market right now. Let me take you on a quick little journey. I want to open up this spreadsheet, and after the break, I will spend Monday of the day after the break showing you a little more about bonds and making sure that you understand how to use the spreadsheet that I'm about to bring up here for you. You go to your files and you find your spreadsheets. And this is the one, Bond Calculations Enhanced. Now, I put that enhanced on it to make sure that I didn't upload an older version that didn't do as much, that wasn't as self-explanatory. But let me download it for you, just so you can have a taste of what's to come. You see, in bond math, the two big things are the bond's price and the bond's yield. If I know the price, I can find the yield. If I know the yield, I can find the price. There it is. And the back room of this is just really mathematically intense. It is one of those things that convinces you that you might not want to do this. But once you get the hang of it, As you can see, it's like all of my spreadsheets. All you need to do is put numbers from a problem into the white cells, and out will come your result that you want. A point here, just to show you, is that we need to find a bond price. You need all the basic information about the bond, including the yield. So I need to know what the coupon rate is, and that will be told to you. And when I'm finding the price, I will already know the yield, and you will be told the yield. And how long does the bond have left? The term of a bond is the time to maturity. So I might have a, let's say, an IBM 6% 2030. That means that it was issued, whenever it was issued, it came due to be paid off in 2030. Well, what would that mean right now? That would mean that the term of the bond is 6 years. We have 6 years until that bond is going to be due. Now, Excel has this nice little trick here. If there are two coupons a year, in other words, the coupon is paid semi-annually, which is the way it is in the United States, you would put a 2. If the bond pays only one time a year, you would have a 1 there. Now, generally speaking, on either of these panels, a 1 or a 2, whether you put a 1 or a 2, your answer isn't going to be that different. And if I ask this on a quiz or the final exam, I'll give enough width to what I take for a right answer so that you could have a 2 or a 1, and you'll still get it right because the numbers are so close. But in this case on the right, I have a bond that has a coupon of 6.225%. And I would tell you that. And I would tell you that the yield to maturity on the bond is 5.750%. And then this bond, I would say, well, this bond is due in 2036. That would mean that it has 10 years remaining. And I'm just going to say the coupons are paid half and half in a year. And all I have to do is that, and I've got the price of the bond. Now, see this thing down here, the current yield? That's kind of a side calculation. All it is, you take amount of the coupon divided by the price of it. So this coupon would pay $62.25 a year. And all the calculation does is take $62.25 divided by the price, $1,035.75. And that's what calculates the current yield. And I'll go back through all of this again after the break, so don't panic if you don't see it. But I always like to layer these, show it to you, and then show it to you again. But that's all you really need to do these days. Now, back in the day, these were pain in the backside calculations. But now, over on this side, you notice that finding the yield is actually harder than finding the price mathematically and practically. Fortunately, Excel does it like it's easy. All you need to know is the term of the bond. The settlement is when you bought it. The maturity is when it finishes. But if you tell it the term of the bond, then it will fill these in for you. Why does it need these? Because Excel needs them to calculate the yield. But all you have to do is tell it how many years are left, and then it will automatically calculate the settlement and the maturity dates. Now, the next thing you'll have to give it the coupon. Now, here's something interesting. Bond prices, you almost never see those on tickers. You see something called the bond quote, which is 1/10 of the actual price. The reason this is done, the reason this happens, is because decades, centuries ago, on Wall Street, when all the traders were going to work in the early morning, these printing houses would print these giant broadsheets that told all the stock and bond prices at the end of the day before. And so to save column space, they would show the bond prices at 1/10 of their price. It's called the quote. It's not the price, it's just a quote. But for some reason, Excel, and I don't know why, but Excel, for calculating a yield, it wants you to give it the quote. So in other words, this is a $942.50 bond, but Excel wants it as a quote. They don't care about it. Notice they don't care about it over there on the price side, but for some reason, Excel wants the quote instead of the price on for finding a yield. Don't ask me why. It's just Excel. But anyway, so you have to give it the quote, not the price. So if I say the bond is $950, that would be a quote of $95 on the bond. And you notice this one, I just put it as a frequency of one coupon a year. But one way or the other, there you go. Look at that. It gives you the yield. It also gives you the current yield as well. But notice, let me show you something interesting here. See the yield on that? Let's say that this bond isn't 94.25, which causes a yield of 9%. Let's say that the bond is 96, in other words, $960. Watch what happens to the yield as the price goes up. The yield goes down. You remember that principle I showed you a couple of classes ago? Price and yield are always inversely related. Suppose that I drop the price of bond. Let's say that the bond is actually $935. So that would be a quote of $93.50. Watch the yield go up. That relationship is a locked in arithmetic relationship. It's just mathematical. Prices go down, yields go up. Let me do one on the other side. Suppose that we had a yield. This one you need the yield to maturity. Let's say that the yield on this bond goes from 5.75% to 6%. Watch what happens to the price. Goes down. See that? It's just a mathematical relationship. Let me show you something else. Watch what happens to the price as I get closer to the maturity date. From 10 years down to 8. From 8 years down to 5. From 5 years down to 2. Suppose that the bond is just about to mature. We'll put a zero in there. All bonds approach par value as a term reduces. Because on the maturity date, the bondholder gets $1,000. It gets paid back what it lent. And so all bonds, unless they're junk or something like that, as the term approaches zero, the bond price approaches par. That's just normal. So that's one of those favorite questions on quiz 5, is what happens as the term of a bond approaches zero? Well, it will approach $1,000. It will approach face value. It will approach par. Okay, one last thing just to show you, just a trick here. Suppose that the coupon is above the yield. Let me put this back to 10 years. See how the yield is what investors want. That's their required rate of return. Suppose that the coupon pays more than the yield. You see that bond is above $1,000. Well, what happens if the coupon is below what the investors want, the yield? 5.8%. The bond is below par. In this case, we say that the bond is selling at a discount to par. In the first example, the bond is selling at a premium to par. So in other words, if the coupon is more than what investors want, the bond will sell above $1,000, as you see here. But if the coupon is below what the investors want, the bond will sell at a discount. The thing I like about this, speaking from a teaching point of view, is that with these Excel sheets, I can show you this in the blink of an eye. Doing this by hand, I mean, I'd do a whole class period just to show you what I did in the last 1 minute. Now you can see if the bond's coupon is better than what investors want. Let's say the coupon is 6.5%. The bond sells at a premium to par. If the coupon sucks, it's not as much as the investors want, which is the yield. The bond sells at a discount to par. So you can actually, with this sheet, you can just play with those numbers. Always stay in the white, for heaven's sake. But if you play with those numbers, you can just see this process. You can see what the how the yield and the coupon are configured together. You can see what happens when you have the term getting longer or getting shorter. And you can do it on either side of this. But this is the essence of what the hard part of Chapter 7 is. This is the core of the difficult part of it. And in now that we're in this modern age with Excel, we can do this in a lot shorter time than we used to be able to do it. But I'll do this again after the spring break, after the midterm, and you get some time off. But for now, I want you to get your attendance radar cranked up, and then you're going to get the quiz open up, and once you're finished with it, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.